Testing. Yeah, let's do it. Let's get a date on here. Today's the 27th. And we're here with Jerry Mooney, C.W. McCain, and myself, Rodney Milner. Mr. Mooney, take it away.
Okay. First, I'd like to make a few suggestions. You know, I hope that all animosity is left at the door, because this issue is, like one man told me, has become a legion of the damned. No matter what side you're on or who you are, it seems like when you get into this issue, it's like falling into a shark's nest, if you know what I mean. You can't do anything right. You can't get any truth anywhere, because somebody's going to deny it no matter how truthful it is. It's just a big, nasty fight. And it's a shame, because we're dealing with the possibility of living men. And we're also dealing with a lot of family members who do deserve the answer. So that's been my primary concern through this whole thing. Now, does DPMO have the Marv Carnes deposition?
Yeah, briefing?
No, his deposition, his 300-page deposition.
I'm sorry.
Marv Carnes used to be my superior.
Marv Carnes.
I don't know.
You should get it. And do you have the Tom Lang memos?
Our library people would know what we have in there.
You should read those, too, because...
Who's the second person?
Tom Lang. He was a Senate investigator. You should try to get a hold of those memos. And you should try to get a hold of Marv Carnes. Now, like I said before the Senate Select Committee, that the objective of this thing should not be for my truth, anybody else's truth, but the truth. And if anybody comes before anybody and says, I'm a POW expert, throw them out, because you should well know, with all the compartmented information and with all the levels of government and all the memos and all the briefings that float around, nobody has it all. I mean, it just doesn't exist. I even work in an NSA when I try to go from office to office to get correlation data, let's say from the Russian side to the Chinese side. I mean, you run into a stone wall. If you don't have the need to know, you don't get through the door. It's about what it means to amounts to. So I made it very emphatic, both in deposition and in open testimony before the Senate Select Committee, that if anybody comes up here and says, I got the truth, be skeptical of it. And this is one thing that concerns me right now. I warned the committee with the declassification of information, you're going to make a lot of experts out there. Now, when you get this declassified information, and there's tons of it floating around today, they're finding the Library of Congress, and people don't have database backup to distinguish between controlled dummy traffic or tactical reports or hot B reports or emulation or whatever the case may be, these people are making conclusions which can be way out in left field, and it creates the anger level. This is the one thing that really pisses me off about the issue, is the anger level that's created out there. And I'm sure you've heard it more than I've heard it. You know, the number of people that are just totally mad, and they suffer from what Colonel Kennedy would call mouthagitis. There's a little muscle that runs up to your ears on these people, and their mouth is moving so fast their ears close and they never hear anything. That's what Colonel Kennedy called mouthagitis. Now, I think there are some things you should check into. Tomorrow I want to run from 1957 all the way up to the end of my career, take you through it and tell you exactly where I went, what I did, and I'm going to keep it as declassified as possible, okay? But, and I have some maps I want to show you on maps, what maps were established in 57, 58, 59, what I was instructed to do by Colonel Kennedy, what TDY trips he sent me on specifically for this issue, what happened in Saigon in 1971 with General Lavelle. So I want to bring it in your perspective, so you know where I'm coming from, and sort of a big picture view from my point of view. And I want to remind you that it's not my truth, not anybody else's truth, but the truth is what we're looking for. That is my position, has been my position from day one. Now, General Senja, is that his name? Spelled S-E-J-N-A, the one who claims that Americans were taken to Czechoslovakia, you know, for drug experiments and all that stuff. That can be easily checked out. That story is out among the community and all the people, but I'd like to explain tomorrow how you can check that out rapidly. Whether it's true or not, you can get to at least a 90% level, and I'll explain that to you tomorrow. Now, Terry Menarsen's statement, that too can be checked out within a matter of hours by asking the proper, right questions, because I was an airborne staff officer for 2.5 years, I ran all that stuff. So I can tell you precisely how to check out his story. I think that's important. So if that has to be put to rest, then you can put it to rest. Because I think there are things that we should start putting to rest rather than let them fester out there like a disease. Now, I think you should also check out a guy by the name of John D. Osborne with a connection to this Sanem. Now, John D. Osborne, that's O-S-B-O-R-N-E, and his wife, Kay. They popped up in 1986. They claimed to be retired NSA people. They were in Cyprus. They went around and interviewed family members. And they claimed to have known me and personal friends of mine as far back as 1968-69 when I was stationed at the 6925th. Well, I was never stationed at the 6925th. Now, this guy used my name and went around and talked to an awful lot of family members and spread an awful lot of garbage. Now, a friend of mine in Canada ran into Mr. Osborne and his wife, Kay. And lo and behold, he swiped one of his business cards, and he worked for a Czechoslovakian tire and rubber company in Canada, which got me to thinking about seeing him. No, I sent that on to Mr. Rospero, and he passed it on to the FBI. I also told the Senate Select Committee about this, and I also, when I went down to NSA to be debriefed, I told their security people saying there's somebody, a guy by the name of Osborne and his wife Kay, are running around posing as NSA officials and are talking to family members, and apparently they have an awful lot of money. But this little thing crossed my mind. Here you got Sena from Czechoslovakia. Now we got a guy posing as an NSA official from Czechoslovakia. I think it's one more door to close. See, I like closing doors. I don't like things hanging out there. I like to slam the doors shut. So, and people know about these things, and so they're topics of discussion in VFW clubs, they're topics of discussion in POW groups. And the thought has crossed my mind is, if you people as the OPI, responsible for this issue, how in the hell can you do your job when you're chasing down all these unsettled, unclosed issues? I mean, you get a family member saying, well, I just talked to Osborne, or somebody just talked to Menarson, or somebody just talked to Mooney, or somebody just talked to Hinden, or somebody just talked to these person. So I think it would be valuable, and that's why I'd like to, I wanted to talk to you. It would be valuable to have a position on the table that you can check out, and you can get a position on, and I'm counting on it to be truthful, not your truth, not my truth, but truthful, where you can come up and say, hey, this is possibly an open door, we'll check it out. This one we have closed. And start closing the issue down by closing down all the rumors, innuendos, and get it down to a pure analytic position where you can do your job without people jumping up and down on you with spikes all the time. Because I think when it comes to the government outside of the White House, DPMO is probably the most hated organization in the government.
I think the ATF has its beat there.
Well, yeah, the jackbooted thugs.
Yeah.
Well, he said Clinton couldn't belong to that. One of the militia guys said because his boots are yellow. They were made for walking, but whatever. You can send a tape down to Clinton and I'll go along with him.
Let me ask a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Do you have the family, do you know the names of the families he visited?
No, I don't, but this was first brought to my attention by Mr. Mark Waple, an attorney at Fayetteville, North Carolina, that handled the Smith-McIntyre lawsuit. That's where I first got the name. And then there's another thing I think you should check out that's sitting out there. See, I get a lot of strange calls. I get calls from retired officers telling me stuff, and most of it's garbage in my opinion because they won't put it on paper or sign their name. So I have to consider it garbage. But I had a very strange call. I believe it was in 1968. The person called me up and said, you're going to receive a call from Colorado, from the airport, and you should talk to this person. And I said, that's fine. Who are you? He said, I cannot tell you. So the phone rang about 10 minutes later, and this person came on with a British accent, and he told me he's a security official for the British government. His job was to install and to check out security devices in embassies. And then he went on to say, and he didn't give me his name, I wished he had, I wished I would have pressed him, that he had seen in the embassies, and I asked him which one, he says Canadian specifically, and he might have said British, I don't remember, but he said Canadian specifically, POW maps hanging on the wall where he was installing this stuff. And I says, well, that's fine. Well, then he rattled off a bunch of locations. So I think it's something you should know about. There's no way I can prove it. There's no way I can discuss it. No way I can debate it. And I don't tell anybody about it. But I think it's something that should be in your purview. You know, because if it involves a foreign government, if it is true, then that should be a State Department.
Do you know who the guy was?
No, I don't. I got two phone calls.
Where was the Canadian embassy? What country?
He said it was in Vietnam.
Canadian embassy in Vietnam.
Yeah, he said it was in Vietnam. And I think he also said a British embassy or British consul office. I'm not sure which.
And the locations, he said?
Yeah, he was given specific locations. When he came up and gave specific place names, like Long Song, he gave one, I forgot the name, but it's northwest of Hanoi. And I later saw a sighting report on that. But it used to be a U.S. installation. It was turned over into a re-education camp. And he gave a couple of other names as well.
This is in 1968.
I'm sorry, 88. One other thing I think you should check out, the USS Valley Forge. I got a claim from a guy who was very specific. He said he was a naval officer. He served on the USS Valley Forge during the Korean War, and he was shot down over Laos, and he walked out, he said. Now, he came to Wolf Point to a guy named Jerry Collins, because Jerry Collins served on the Valley Forge as well. There was a Korean. He saw an advertisement in some VFW magazine about a reunion. He came to Wolf Point, and we got a good description of him. Now, this was turned over to the government because they had this returnee program, which I don't believe in, but I figured, what the heck, here's a guy that claims it. The guy had been coming to Wolf Point every year for about 7 years, I guess, because he'd work for custom combiners in the summer for straight cash, and then he'd work out west. After I turned him into the government, never saw him again. Now, he's 5'10". Red hair, freckles or pock marks, approximately 56 years of age, naval officer, served on the Valley Forge in Korea, so he claims, and was a naval pilot in the Gulf of Tonkin. And he might have said that Mr. Jerry Collins was the one who brought this to my attention. Now, he came to Wolf Point, he came to the store I worked, he underlined Collins' phone number. He took off, and I reported this to Perl, and Perl in turn passed it on. And I also turned this over to the Senate Select Committee, and I also brought this to the attention of... Now, these are the types of things that sit out there hanging that people grab on and talk on and talk on and talk on and talk on.
Well, he's claiming he's an MIA that hasn't been located.
Right. He says he walked out. He said he was not captured. He was there for a while, and then he walked out. He came back to the United States via... working as a longshoreman on a ship. But with that type of description, I would think you should be able to check it out. And if it's bull, then fine. That's a story that's dead.
Now, he was shot down during the Korean War?
No, Vietnam War.
Okay, yeah. It's
Vietnam War. Let's see, that story. I think he said 68. I'm not sure. I think that's what he told Mr. Collins.
When did he leave Laos?
He didn't say. But he said he worked his way back as a longshoreman. Not a longshoreman, but these guys that are on boats, you know, stoke and, you know, that type of garbage. But these are the things that I think that should kind of be put to rest. You know what I mean? Because the stories are out there, they're repeated, they're embellished, and pretty soon you've got a secret returning program, and everybody says, well, look at this, look at that, and yet there's not one shred of evidence. There's just a lot of words. And that's what I was saying earlier. If you can start taking this stuff and putting it to bed, you can spend more time doing your job than answering a lot of stupid questions and chasing things down.
How many times did this guy talk to Collins?
He talked to a guy in California first after he saw this advertisement for a reunion, and then Collins later.
Just once?
Yeah, I think so.
He never gave his name?
Never gave his name. He came to the store in Wolf Point, and I recognized him because he came every year. And after he left the phone book open on the courtesy counter desk, and he had underlined Jerry Collins' name. I said, that's got to be the guy. So I informed Mr. Perl, and then from there, I assume he took it from there, and then I also turned it over to NSA, and I also turned it over to the Senate Select Committee.
Does Mr. Collins know this guy's name?
He might. Mr. Conn lives in, well, no, he's moved. He used to be with the BVA. He might live in Helen and all. I can try to get his phone number.
Yes, please.
Okay. I can try and do that. Because I got an old Wolfborn phone book. At least we can get up there and find out what the deal is. But it's something I think that...
Yes, sir.
You must be rich.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, sir.
The key here for you. Sorry I wasn't in my office when you...
Oh, not a problem.
Hey, you keep that till you're done, and you just turn it back into my office. If I'm not there, just drop it in the basket there. Outside.
Yeah, well, it's okay to use the room tomorrow also, right, sir?
Oh, yeah. You're booked.
Great. We still turn the key in tonight, though, right?
No. You turn it in tomorrow when you're done.
Okay.
And you'll have it in the morning, and just shut off the light. My people will be in here to badge and stuff, so.
Okay, thank you, sir.
No problem. Thank you, sir.
So these are the kind of things that are sitting out there, and I think that, you know, if you can close these things down, if Menarsen is not telling the truth, just based on PMFRs and tasking, you can either do it through NSA or through SAC, you can close this stuff down. But I'll get more detail on that tomorrow so that you can get a specific idea of how to close down issues that are still burning on the table and taking up time and wasting time. If he's telling the truth, then by golly, you know, you're moving on. Let's see if there's something else I wanted to bring up.
Oh, real quick,
yes,
this
sir.
Naval officer would be 56 years old.
That would be my guess.
Today?
No, back then.
Back in...
I'd say he was pushing 60.
That was back in when?
Yeah. This was back in about maybe 4 years before I left Four Points. So that put it 89, 88, somewhere in that time frame. He was pushing 60. And I got a good description on him. Now, this has all been turned over to the government before. But, I mean, it would be interesting if there was somebody with red hair on the Valley Forge and then, you know, disappeared later on. It would be an interesting thing. But it should be checked out. It shouldn't lay there because someday it just might show up in somebody's book and then somebody else will read it and you've got another story going.
Yeah, so you said back in 89?
About that time. It was in that time frame. And he was, I said 56, but it's right in that deal, you know, pushing 60. That's what he looked like to me. And I'd seen him for quite a few years before that. He'd come up and do these things.
If you turned information over to Ross Perot and he turned it over to the government, might have been checked out already or whatever.
Okay.
Not.
Okay.
That's before my time.
Now, there's just some things. One thing I think you've got to do that relates to two incidences. Now, I'm having a hell of a time with Moscow bound. I was trained to it, educated to it, and all this other stuff. But I think there's a question that you should ask the NSA. And the question is simply this. I mean, I already know what the answer is, but I think just test some veracity of the agency here. Did anything happen, any change that could be related to the crew of the C-130 shot down on 2 September 1958. Did any change occur in the Soviet Union that could be related to their loss and a successful debrief or interrogation of these men?
September?
Yeah, 2 September 58. It was that one...
58
or
68?
58. It was lured in by Soviet Armenia. It was lured in. I'd also ask them the same question as it relates to the EC-47 Cuba.
And, well, C-130, Sohai excavated a site. Armenian, you say?
Yeah, this is in the Soviet Union.
Right.
Okay, this is...
No, it wasn't in the Soviet Union. I don't have the same one, so I'm sorry.
Right. So what had happened is the C-130 was flying back and forth, and they alerted in with a beacon. I was sitting in Tripoli, Libya at that time. So, but I would just simply ask them, did anything happen within the Soviet system that was unexpected, that could possibly be related to the capture of any surviving crew members and a successful interrogation or debriefing of the surviving crew members? See, I had spent a lot of time with Colonel Kennedy. I don't know if you knew Colonel Kennedy. I mean, this guy was something else. Oh, man. But this guy was a nitpicker. Everything, and I'll get into that in detail tomorrow, every loose end had to have a bow on it. Everything had to be checked down. And he didn't care if he worked 24 hours, 36 hours, or 48 hours in a day, it would be. And these are the types of things that I'd like to talk to you about tomorrow, not as a truth, but as something for you to consider, to look at, and a big picture overview. You know, because, like I say, I'm not OPI. I don't have the power, authority, or accountability, or the responsibility for this issue. I'm just somebody who's got unfinished business trying to make sure that what happened to me, what I did, what I was ordered to do, what records were kept, where those records were left, all those things, that they get a fair shake and the full overview of the issue. And that's all I'm asking for. I don't want to stand there and, in fact, I get a little bit upset getting called to Washington to testify, because I've been there so damn many times and deposed so many times, I'm getting tired of it. Well, they got my story, they should have had it checked out by now. Also, I think that it would behoove, in the investigation of the issue, if it was expanded, where you do a little bit of what Colonel Kennedy would call pile analysis. Now, we did this in 1969, 70, 71, 72. Now, there's a misconception out there that NSA is sole source. They're not. I mean, we've got interrogation reports, we've got sighting reports, we've got all this stuff. In fact, I got cover sheets from documents. I'll show you how they were sent directly to B6, where I worked. Now, what the colonel had us do was control dummy traffic. There's two different types. One is for their own practice, and one is also to try to influence the policy of people who are receiving it. Now, control dummy traffic can come in the communications, it can come in a debrief, it can come in documents, and it can come in photo. And we started a very intensive research because with our database, we could look at the traffic and say, hey, this is valid tactical information, this is emulation, run it through our databases, and this is dummy control. Well, what the colonel wanted to know with the dummy control traffic, especially the FBIS stuff and other, you know, newspaper articles, and we collected newspaper articles and all this stuff, was, are they trying to influence our decision making? What are they trying to do? Like, they would reference there's 33 Lao and 5 Americans in this prison camp, and it would be in clear text. So what we'd do is go back and say, hey, are there any sighting reports that will relate to that? Because in the control dummy scenario, they have to have some truth in it. Otherwise, you're not going to get sucked up by it. So the truth could be just one paragraph or one number or one location. And then you have to find that, find what they're telling the truth so you can find out what the dummy is. Now, we saw some control dummy traffic where on FBIS where they'd come up and say, hey, we shot down this F-4 on such and such a date, which was wrong, and we captured two pilots alive, which was wrong, because we were able to match it up to an actual shoot-down where both of them were killed. But they were telling the truth about the shoot-down, but they were lying about the capture. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they were trying to sort of snowball us. So we did this pile analysis, and unfortunately it was never completed because Kennedy moved on and I moved on, but the records were left there. We did it on mixed prison systems because we had a very high concern about pardon and parole. We did it on shoot downs. We did it on, we did some on the Chinese, not much, because on their Lao, Burma, Cambodian control, they often talked about give me statuses of prisoners for the year. You know, how many Americans do you have? How many Thais do you have? How many Lao do you have? In fact, I have one of those messages I can show to you tomorrow. You know, it's been declassified. So these were control dummy too. Now, if you don't have good database, you can take control dummy and be controlled and be a dummy. They got you. They're influencing you. It's the same thing with photo. I mean, remember the big stink in the hearings? We got USA out there. We got Cyrix out there. Now, if anybody can convince me that the North Vietnamese are going to let somebody run around and stamp out a big old thing, I'll be totally surprised. Or if anybody's going to sit there and tell me that, well, maybe they did it secretly, escaped for 20 minutes, and then no North Vietnamese aircraft saw it, no commercial aircraft saw it and report it, would they go out and destroy it? No. That stuff that we saw was considered control dummies. They're trying to send us a message. But you have to have tons of it. And this is what we were doing. Unfortunately, the study apparently ended, and the colonel went his way, and I went my way, and other guys went their way. But I think that's, again, it's something you can lay to rest, because these family members and these POW groups are now getting this data. And they're sitting there saying, well, look at this. Five Americans held here and transferred here. No, it doesn't work that way, because they have that product redacted. Or if you look at the actual translation of the signature, it's a political officer, so you have an immolation message. So when they start releasing all this data to the family members, it's going to cause you people nightmares. Because they're not getting the full text, and even if they did get the full text, and they didn't have the database to tell them this was a political officer, so this is an immolation message, I mean, they're going to run off and say, that's my husband, that's my father, that's my daughter, that's my uncle, that's my cat, that's my dog. You see what I'm getting at? So, and I warned the committee, I said, if you declassify this stuff, and I don't care how you redact it, and I did this in open testimony, you can check it out, you're going to open up a bucket of worms. Because every wannabe analyst out there, and every wannabe with a certain tight agenda out there, is going to take this stuff and is going to shove it up your nose. And I'm sure it's happening to you. I'm sure you're getting letters saying, what about this? What about that? You know, what about this? So I think that that should be put to rest. I think there should be some type of way to sit down and say, now look it. I know what I'd do if I was in DPMO and Colonel Kennedy was my boss. And I'll tell you if you want to know. If he'd come up to me and he'd say, this is bullshit. We're trying to do a job and we're spending 60-70% of our time answering questions, and many times we can't answer them because they haven't been fully analyzed or correlated. And we got Congress on our ass 24 hours a day, and how in the hell can we do our job with all this going on? He says, you sit down and you write up a set of EEIs, which covers a full spectrum. In other words, mixed prison systems, that's going to be studied. We're going to pile that. Moscow bound, any Soviet connection. We'll go over to A group and we're going to jump on their butt. Because we did one thing one time and got in a lot of trouble. We had Russian shipping going on. And we had special air activity, Soviet aircraft meeting the shipping. Then there was a report saying that they were carrying out wounded by a Soviet doctor. Saying they were carrying out wounded.
Americans?
Yes.
It said wounded Americans.
Wounded Americans. Australians talked to the actual doctors. Australian 60 Minutes. So now here you had the ship, it was on Australian 60 Minutes, I think number two, and they actually talked to the doctor. Now is it true? I don't know. But what we did, we can't confirm the conversation. But what we did is we checked the shipping, and then if a special air activity aircraft of the Soviet Union flew to the same place and met them, you had a piece. You see what I mean? You had a piece to concern you. And then we started plowing through the sighting reports, but trying to get sighting reports on the Soviet Union was damn near impossible. Because you ran into A group, you're going to the NSA, you know how it is. You go over there and bang, you know, you're from B group, what the hell are you doing over in A group, you know? But we were doing that type of analysis, correlation analysis. Now tomorrow, I think it would be best if I wrote down the titles of the reports for you. You know, of what these reports were, the special air activity aircraft, so you can, I'll write those titles down for you, okay? So we did this connecting analysis process. That would be an EEI he would set up. Another EEI that he'd set up is the Who to Ask list. Now, I caught shit over that. You know, when I came out with the Who to Ask list, I had 1,000 names of MIAs, and behind each name, the specific North Vietnamese unit that would have information. That was done when I reproduced it in the briefing script, which NSA and the committee took and won't give back to me. They have the list. And they won't give it back to me. I took it in 1992. In fact, senators won't even answer my letters. That's 400 long pages long, this briefing strip. It took me 2 years to build it. But what we did is we had a name. And in some cases, we had it down to AAA company. Battalion, regiment, and division. Exactly who had information on this map. And we had over 1,000 names. Now, we prepared this for the State Department as a negotiating tool. Because if they could go over there and say, hey, now, wait a minute, San D. Francisco, you say you don't know anything about him. But we have operational data that he was on the ground. We got beepers and all this good stuff. We talked to him. Now we got this message that says you captured him. You mentioned his name in text, which is one they can't seem to find now. And we also know that your 284th AAA Regiment, your 367th Division, have information on him. Now we want to talk to those people. You see where I'm getting at? What Colonel Kennedy was after? This is the way he was setting this thing up. He wanted this so detailed that the negotiators and the people who were going to do any type of negotiations could then put it into a format, a policy format, you know, where they could actually discuss it without, you know. Now, I reproduced that, and I carried it with me to Senate Select Committee. Plus, I reproduced a lot of other things. Turned it over for the NSA for full, complete evaluation. And then it was supposed to come back to me. And I wrote several senators on the committee saying, I'd like my briefing strip back. And I guess they classified it, and that was the end of it. But it's still floating around. It's all hand-drawn. It's all handwritten. No computerized. But it took me 2.5 years and over $16,000 of computer time to put the damn thing together.
You're saying we. You know, we put this together.
Colonel Kennedy was a director, and then it was Mob Connors was the one. If you read his affidavit or his deposition.
Well, they helped you with this briefing script?
Oh, no. This I did in 1986 and 87. This is from memory. This is what I put. The original was on 5x8 cards. Like you'd have a name and everybody on that crew. Then you'd have the units behind it, the crypto system title, references to any operational data like the OPREP 3s, if there's any correlation reports made, any emulation message about them, any references in the Washington Post to the loss, we even kept those. And they were in a package, but the card itself had all this data, included the transcription numbers, you know, like they put on the top, all that stuff, and the real number. We also had the real number. And we put the real number down, which was only good for about 30 days, because after 30 days, usually degauss the tapes. You know, they went out there and degauss the tapes. But if we had something come up, if DIA called, we could go right back to NKP or Combat Apple or whatever the case may be and say, hey, this real number, without digging the traffic up. So there was a card for each incident, then a folder. And then from those incident cards, we made these lists. And then these lists were offered to DIA over the phone, saying, hey, we have the Kissinger list, we have the no-taps list, we have all these lists. Do you want them? Because we're getting close in late 72, you know, to this thing getting over with. And I was told, and this is an exact quote, I was told, no, we have something better. And I don't think I was lied to, because there was no reason at that time for anybody to lie. There was great rapport between the agencies, tremendous rapport. And if you get a hold of the Tom Lang memos, you're going to see something very, very unique in them. Because the Tom Lang memos, I stated in testimony in an affidavit that we were never requested from anybody to provide POW support in 72 or 73. Now, 8 NSA officials in deposition have said the same thing. And I was told on the phone they have something better. I'd sure like to know what the something better was, and I don't think I was lied to. Because I had worked with these guys, you know, for 4 years, back and forth. I'd visit DIA, and these guys were professional. I mean, these were sharp. To tell you how professional they were, I asked them one time, I said, I got these strange missiles the Vietnamese are talking about. They're so many feet long and they're wide, and they got wet and they're drying them out. DIA analysts come back to me and said, hey, they're SA-7 missiles, and here are the crate numbers and the date they were shipped in. Now, that's good. And he told me where they came from. Now, that is good. So these guys, so I don't think he was lying to me, unless somebody, I don't think anybody was lying back then in 72, 73. I think there was honest, good information that Kissinger had and Edelberger had, but somehow, be it Watergate or be it the political situation or the natives trying to climb over the White House wall where they cut this thing down to a back burner for a while, then everybody left, everybody went their separate ways, and when they got back to it, it was too late. Because what was on paper was like 60% good, but if the analysts were still around, there's 40% in their heads to explain what's on that paper, which makes it all that much better. See what I mean? And those guys all disappeared. Mark Connors disappeared. Get his depo. You'll find it very interesting. Very, very interesting. And the Tom Lang memos, get those. They're very, very, they've all been declassified. I'm getting the impression people keep you guys in the dark. You know, I think you've been kept in the dark a little bit. Now, I'd also like to talk about China bomb, but there's one area tomorrow I'd like to get into it. Because it was low, low priority. And that did not come on board until the Vietnam War. MB was on after Korea. China bomb did not come on until after the Korea, or after or in the Vietnam War, when that term CB first started popping around. The CCF 3 fighter
popping around where?
In the agency. I mean, we're talking about Colonel Kenny, myself, Colonel Gallagher, and others. You know, so the Chinese, they were there 100,000 strong with AAA. They were all over Cambodia, Laos, and Burma. So they had the opportunity and the need to take these men for quantum leap technology. But we didn't see much of them other than, you know, reports that they were shooting down aircraft. They didn't maintain any strict communications or anything like that. The Soviets maintained none. But in 76, when we went down to CIA, Mr. Michalski, who now denies or denied to some people he'd ever met me, but he was the chief company code officer, airborne operations. I was the airborne staff officer for Asia, North Asia. That's Vietnam, not Vietnam, but China and North Korea, plus third party, and for Central Asia. We went down there. We were moving the U-2 out of Southeast Asia. This was in 74. And bringing it up to Korea at the request of DIA. Because DIA had an INW thing going. Big time INW, the Koreans are coming and all that stuff, so they needed a better resource. So we picked up our whole downlink package, take out of Southeast Asia. Now I was tasked to write the gain assessment. And I would write it from a national level. And DIA was tasked to write the INW gain assessment for tactical support to the troops in Korea. B6 was supposed to write a loss assessment. In other words, if we pull this resource out of Southeast Asia, what are you going to lose? And immediately the question came up, POW coverage. Well, at that time, anybody who was even working in the agency knew that they were to landline and it was everything else, so the loss of an airborne resource, other than going back and sampling once in a while, would make no difference whatsoever. They didn't have to run around. They didn't have to use backpack radios anymore. So we had to go down, once DIA got the INW down, we sat down and said, we're putting national requirements on this bird, it's close to China, and we're still thinking China bomb. Is there any indications that we can come up with that would show that an American prisoner was either interrogated by the Chinese or may have been moved to China? So there was two areas we were concerned about because we were seeing quantum leap in two areas of China, or two specific technologies of China at that time. One I've already discussed, and that was the CCF-2 fighter. The other one, maybe we can find some way to talk around it tomorrow, but it's very sensitive. Mr. Wachowski and I went down to CIA, and we said, here's what they want to do. This is 76. I said 74. I'm sorry. This is 76, 1976. Okay? This is 1976. My boss was Mr. Tilley, and I was doing this at his direction, Mr. Tilley. We went down, and we told the NIO for Northeast Asia that NSA was totally satisfied with the BIA INW requirements. We had taken the requirements and translated them into little short statements for the operators, you know, because the requirements were very long paragraphs. And we had cut them down into small EDIs, tasking things like, you know, cover this. That's all it said. We also said that we were going to request from the CIA permission to run the aircraft out further into the Yellow Sea Pohai Gulf area because of two things which we thought were POW related. And we told them CCF-3 fighter, which we moved up in priority, I think the priority number 3, and this other thing, which we moved up. The NIO was not surprised. But we were talking about POWs in China. Didn't shock him a bit. He says, yeah, go ahead. Sounds good to me. In fact, I do.
The NIO was chief... Polish name?
No, the NIO was the NIO for Northeast Asia, China and Korea at CIA.
Do you remember his name?
No, I don't. Okay. He worked for George Bush. George Bush, I think, was DCO at that time.
Yeah.
So, we came back, and we raised these level. Now, these taskings are probably still there for all I know, so it wouldn't be hard to look at the taskings for the Olympic game. I mean, the Olympic game is still in Korea, as far as I know. Went from torch to game. And you'll see them right there. And you can even ask for the originals. And you'll see them right there. Because they were written
approved by the IOCIA, approved by the DIA. And in fact, I'm not sure about this, but I don't think we ever told DIA about our POW concerns on these two items. In fact, I'm almost positive we never told DIA. We just told them that we had a high national priority on these two items. I'm almost positive we never told DIA why we had the high concern. And I don't know if that was ordered, directed, or just an oversight. I don't think it was ordered or directed. I just think that, you know, we wanted to put the CCF fighter up there, and we wanted to put this other thing up there, and they just accepted it because they got, we took 20% of the aircraft, and they got 80%, and they were very happy with the Ryan Dudley. But
we take a break here so I can change the tape, because we're going to run out in a minute.
Okay.